Well, welcome everyone to Life in the Peloton. I'm sitting here again with Lionel Burney, and we're ready to discuss this week's episode featuring one of Life in the Peloton's favourites and one of my good friends, Adam Hansen. Welcome, Lionel.
Hi, Mitch. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, actually. Yeah, just had a big day of ergo today, or Zwifting and racing and sweating. And I'm feeling pretty good at this moment. I've had a nice big lunch, a cup of coffee, you know, I'm set up for the day. I'm ready.
Excellent, excellent. And this is an episode with Adam Hansen recorded in what feels like another lifetime ago. You were back at the Tour Down Under when you recorded this one, when life was, well, a lot more normal than it is now.
Yes, that's right. It's come to a bit of a routine for us. 3 years in a row running there at Tour Down Under, I've sort of pulled him aside and said, hey, Adam, you got a moment? Let's try and get a podcast in. And after we did that first one, and especially the second one, I couldn't go past the opportunity of trying to get a third one. And it was great, actually. Again, another little angle and another great chat with him, and a lot of time at that race. But weirdly, it's hard to find a moment to sit down where both of us aren't busy doing something. So we were able to find a little moment and get this one recorded. I've kept this one in the back catalogue to a special time, and I thought now's the moment. I'm simply asking Adam 3 questions. What's something he's currently excited about? What's something he's no longer doing? And what's something that's wacky, crazy, quick fix Adam Hansen? And I thought, you know, when you listen to this podcast, you have to keep reminding yourself that Adam is actually a professional cyclist and has been. And you're listening to him, you think, this guy is well-rounded person. I don't know what better way to say that. He's just incredible. So 3 simple questions that I thought he would have some great answers to. So sit back and enjoy this one, guys, because I was just sitting back and loving it. Well, this is the annual. We're at Tour Down Under, Adam Hansen, 2020. It's a new year. That means it's time for a new podcast. Welcome.
Thank you for having me again.
I'm really happy that you agreed to it. It was hard to find a time here. It's always very busy. And you were just explaining to me your schedule. I thought I had quite a busy schedule, but you've trumped me there. And we had to catch up out on the bike today. First time we've chatted pretty much the whole race. And we're at the second last stage of the race.
Yeah, it's like you said, you know, we always say that the most convenient thing about the Tour Down Under is, you know, one hotel, one village. It's so easy. But all the media's at the same hotel, you're easy accessible. And it's very time consuming here.
It is. So let's not waste too much more time then. And let's get into this podcast. This is an exciting idea I had in the off season. I thought, I heard this idea on another podcast, and what I want to talk to you today about is I've got 3 questions. The first question being, what is something that you're currently excited about? The second question being, what is something that you are no longer doing anymore? And the third question would be, what is something that is wacky, maybe a quick fix, Adam Hansen quick fix, something different that you still do that you probably don't tell everyone that you do, something, or some little bit of insight knowledge to people. So they're the 3 questions we're going to talk about today, and we're going to do 3 of each from those topics. So I've pretty much left it over to you and given you some time to do some research, and I'm just going to sit back and listen and comment. So let's just start with the first 3 things. Are you happy with that format?
Yep.
Great. Well, let's start with the first 3, and that is things that you're currently excited about.
Well, I have to say composites.
Composites?
Carbon fiber, fiberglass, stuff like this. So, you know, with my shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been doing it for a long time, but it still excites me. It's actually never ending. And it's kind of good in the way I like, especially for me, it's not a job for me. So I can take my time. The thing with composites is, you know, there's a standard way of doing things. Well, as I say, you have your end product, and then you have at the start your end product, whatever that is, if it's just a car part or a pair of cycling shoes, whatever. And then you have a bunch of tools and a bunch of material, and then you have to work out how you're going to get from A to B. And for me, is over the years of making different shoes, you'll think of a different method and different layup, and if you're going to do like use a silicon mold or a hard mold or with a male mold, and then you'll follow that process. It could take, you know, a month to do, and I could start on one project, and then halfway through it I'll be at a bike race or something, I'll get a different idea, and I'll be like, okay, finish the one you do, the method you're doing, and then start the next one when you get back. And just, you know, being into composites, also watching other guys, what they do on YouTube, and, you know, saying, oh, will that method work, or maybe it won't, and that material. And there's just so much out there, and you can really do anything with it, and it's just trying to work it out.
So when you say now composites and you're watching other people on YouTube, I can't imagine you're finding a lot of people making shoes on YouTube. So are you just watching other people work carbon into different stuff? What are the people making on YouTube like you?
I haven't found anything that other people are making like me. But what I mean by that is, the problem with what I'm doing is, if I was to compare what I do to someone else, it's probably like radio control planes, for example, where it's a super light end product. And a lot of the material I buy is for these products also, because, like, for example, if you want to buy pre-peg carbon, so pre-peg carbon is it's carbon fiber fabric with the pre-peg inside. And you don't need to mix epoxy with hardener to the correct ratio and then do a wet layup. So it's you buy it all together. You just throw it in the mold, vacuum it, heat it to a certain temperature, and then you get your perfect ratio of epoxy to carbon fiber. But the problem with this is, the lightest I've seen is 220 grams per square meter of material, where the top layer of my shoes, the lightest I've done is 65 grams.
Oh.
So it's a huge difference. It's more than three times lighter. So, you know, I could use, and this is what they, and for, no one does one layer when they make like a car part, for example.
Because it's too weak?
Yeah, it's too weak. Like for, you know, if you're doing some type of structure, a frame of a car, or even a bicycle frame, for example, there'd be more layers. And what I'm doing is much, much thinner. So that's why I have to do the wet layup, which is more of a, it's an older style. Just because they haven't made the, let me say, there's no application where you really need so thin carbon fiber. So I just, yeah, well, it's, you know, I like watching other people's ideas to just get inspired by, like, for example, when there's technical, if there's a really technical mold, one guy might use a silicon vacuum bag because it's more flexible material. And it can turn corners a lot better, where the traditional method is just use a vacuum bag, so it's just plastic and it crinkles. Mm. That's why sometimes when you look inside of a carbon frame, it's really messy and you see the creases and that. That's the creases from the vacuum bag. Where if you use a silicon, it'll be nice and smooth in that. Where I would steal that method, but it'll be for a totally different idea on how I do it. So I can pick up little things just to make my idea a bit easier.
Have you ever thought about, I don't know, I'm probably sure people have asked you 100 times, but have you ever thought about making shoes for someone else?
Yes, and there'll be 2 riders in the Pro Peloton using it in February this year.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Mm-hmm. Just quickly, just in case anyone doesn't know, explain what your shoes are in a nutshell. Anyone out there who hasn't seen your shoes, the Hansinos, quickly explain to them what we were just talking about and what the end product is.
In short, it's just a carbon fiber sock. It is super lightweight. So it's basically, I took a mold of my foot in my inner soles. So the sole of the foot is my inner sole. So I don't need inner soles. And inner soles can weigh up to 150 grams. So you save 150 grams there. And your traditional shoes is you just have a carbon flat plate and your shoes on top. And if you just hold a piece of paper up in the air, you'll see it flex. And then you'll see a Bond shoe that'll have the sole, like we call bathtub design. And these, the walls of a bathtub makes that Bond shoe more stiffer. So I've gone a step further and I've created the whole one piece where the carbon goes over the top. And like a tube, for example. And this is made a lot more stiffer. And because I can make it more stiffer by using this method, I can use a lot less material. And that's where I can get it super lightweight. So it's a custom. It's made of my foot, which means I've got to take a plug of my foot, a mold of my foot, and make a plug of it. And it was so difficult to start because when you do a mold of something, there's normally one side is perfect. So when we look at a bike frame, it's perfect from the outside, or a car piece, it's perfect from the outside. And the inside, you see the mess in the vacuum bag material and the peel off ply and everything like that. But with shoes, it's got to be perfect on the inside because that's got to be comfort, and that's where the mold is. And then it has to be aesthetic from the outside so it looks nice and presented. So that's where the real hurdle was. And also, if you just, like, people, when I say, you know, the molds take so long to make, people are like, yeah, just 3D print it. It's like, well, true, but if you have a solid foot, you can't get out of the shoe. So I use different materials like aquaporin, which is you make a mold of your foot from this material, and once it's done, you just put water and the foot will come out. And that was too expensive, and then that company went broke. So then I went to silicon. So I'd made a silicon copy of my foot, which is really good because then you can, you know, pull it out because of silicon. But then you've got to be careful because when you run under vacuum, the silicon bends, and then if your foot bends, then your shoe will be like that. So there's all these type of little problems you come into. And this is why I really like it, because it's just problem solving, you know what I mean? Right. You can do, like, I've tried so many different methods and way, and there's...
Does it ever frustrate you? Are you just like, all right, I need to give this a rest for a while because I'm getting frustrated?
No, but it's time. I enjoy it, and it is very time-consuming, but the biggest problem is that I'll be doing it the night before I have to leave, you know, until 2 a.m. and I've got to catch a plane, and I'll be doing the final gluing two pieces together, the carbon, and it gets stressful in that sense. So, yeah, like, if I wish I had more time to do it.
All right, well, that was great. Let's move on to number two, something else that you're excited about.
Currently, well, our last talk was on nutrition, and I am excited about nutrition.
Yep.
So... at the moment, it's like I'm really into like fasting and longevity. Just trying to be, you know, super healthy. Yeah, with that, there's just so much out there now. We touched on our last podcast, like autophagy or pacathy, depends how you want to pronounce it, so different languages. And this is when you do fasting at a long enough state where your body breaks down damaged old cells and creates new cells from it. So it's a recycling phase. And tests with mice lived 30-40% longer doing this, and at the moment we cannot find a biomarker when we're into this state, but we do know it does work. And the reason why, well, you know, like, people always say, yeah, but do you really want to live longer? I was like, well, no, I don't want to live, you know, longer than 80 or 90, but I want to be 50, feeling 50 at the age of 60.
If I can get an extra, the quality of life, exactly, be better till the day you die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I can live younger longer, then this is it. And the good thing about, you know, autophagy is that a lot of people having cancer today and tumors and things like that, and these are actually created from older cells in the body. And because we're feasting so much, we're giving nutrients to these older damaged cells, and we're actually keeping them alive. And that's what we shouldn't be doing. And what we should be doing is doing intermittent fasting or some type of fasting. There's many different methods out there, and actually killing off those cells and creating new cells from it. So I'm really into this and the nutrition, health.
Just on the fasting, just before we move off that, have you been implementing any fasting this week while you've been here, or is that something you do away from the race?
It's much easier after the race.
Yeah.
There's always, like, you know, different goals when you're fasting. So, for example, if you do a water fast, if you just want, like, a low-calorie intake as your fasting goal, then having coffee, for example, is okay in that fasting state. But if you actually want a cleansing of your gut biome, then coffee is actually not good in that type of fasting state. So it depends what your goal is, what type of fasting you're doing. And for me, what I like to do is at least, you know, every second day, have a good 12 hours of actually no food in your stomach. Because they say it takes between 6 to 8 hours for your body to actually cleanse your stomach and get everything out. And what we're actually doing is, and also that time is once the food's gone through it. So, you know, to get those 6 to 8 hours is quite difficult, because if you're eating, you know, 8 o'clock and then 4 hours for the food to go through it, and then you get up and then you're eating, you know, 7 o'clock or and then we do eat a bit later sometimes, so it is actually kind of difficult. So I try and, you know, have a bit of a break. I try and do it as much as possible. Like, if we're at a grand tour, I'd definitely have a fasted 24 hours, so I won't have food the night of that stage. Before the rest day, I won't have breakfast and I won't have lunch, and then I do a 24-hour fast.
Nice. That's a great idea. Yeah, oh, on the grand tour. And I just think of that. I definitely noticed, sorry to interrupt on that, on the grand tour theory, is that there comes a period where you almost feel blocked because you haven't given your body enough time. from to recover, because you just it's using energy to eat.
Exactly. You just constantly
constantly
putting food down your stomach and constantly digesting. And I think it's yeah, this is not exactly healthy. Well, we're doing grand tour is not healthy. But just to have a break, yeah, you just feel so much better afterwards.
Because we could go down a rabbit hole with that, and I'm sensing we should move on to the next one. What's something else you're excited about currently?
I've got this new gig with Liamo, so it's a motion analyzer of the body, writing, and for me this is, it's actually a really cool device, and using it, it's just, for me it's really made a new spark in my cycling. I love it how, you know, for me it's like when the power meter came out, this is really cool, and we actually see what we're doing, and okay, Liamo is not so big now where you can compare from one rider to another. You know, we finish a race, for example, and, you know, your sprinter wins or nothing happens, and us guys who do the work, we got nothing to brag about or talk about, you know. Yeah. And it's kind of cool to have the power where you can see, oh, well, you know, today was a tough day. You know, you did normalized power of 320 or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's something that we, you know, just made cycling a bit more interesting. And so for me with this Liamo, it's, yeah, it's just made me look more into the scientific background, into cycling more, and, yeah, made me be more focused on my training and just trying to be more, it's going to sound crazy, a bit more professional.
Quickly explain, if you can, what it is.
So basically you put these little sensors, yeah, so you have five of them, and you put them on your feet, your quads, and then your pelvic. And it measures, just measures what your limbs do. So runners use it also. And in cycling, you know, it measures like the top of the range and the bottom of the range. So we have leg angle range, so the top you stroke to the bottom, and you find out that range, and you can actually compare from your left leg to your right leg. But the amazing thing is it actually works out what happens between. So, you know, a lot of riders have a slowdown in the stroke, and this is, for me, it's really, it's like there's also like a dead spot score too, and measures your dead spots. And I've tested a lot of riders, and, you know, I could put, you know, Tim Wellens, Rowan Dennis, Victor Campanats, myself, and just put, you know, what the system reads out, and you can just see from the best to the worst riders from the data, and it's really that clear. Yeah, it's pretty scary in that.
So is it then true from what you've seen so far that the best riders is a combination of their physical ability, but also the way that they actually pedal a bike? Then
yeah, it's how fluid they are.
Yeah, right.
Now it could just be, you know, coincidence. But yeah, it makes total sense, because, like, if you just talk about the accelerometer on the leg, I've seen like bad riders where the accelerometer actually slowed down, and then you have to re-accelerate again, and it's quite a lot. And this is an MPI that we haven't really created for the device yet. This is something that we've just discovered. We should be able to punch out a number to say, you know, you're actually losing, you know, 12% or 8% efficiency. And that's an extra, you know, time you have to fire that muscle up as you on the downstroke.
You're referring to now simply on a downward stroke.
Of the thigh. Just the thigh, not the foot, the thigh. So with the foot changes the angular. So in the foot we use, there's also accelerometer there, but a gyro, and with the gyro on the x-axis, so that's where like the pedal is pointing, that might change a bit as you downstroke, and yes, you lose power because you should be more fluid there. It's not, in my opinion, it's not so important if you're changing the x-value in the gyro, because there's always power applied. But when the accelerometer changes on your thigh and it slows down, then it's really power loss.
Have you found out why someone would pedal like that? Because it just seems like to me, and I might be one of those people, I've got no idea. It seems like to me very odd that once you trigger your muscle to push down, that during the downward stroke it would relax and then reapply pressure. Why is that happening?
It sounds a bit crazy, and we never saw it until we actually had the sensors on us. Well, the most simple, easiest, common reason why is when you, what we call ankling. So you've actually fired your quad and you cannot hold that gear, your calf is not strong enough, and then your heel actually drop below the pedal spindle, and then once you're actually getting at the bottom of your pedal stroke and you've slowed down the intensity you're pushing your quad, your calf is actually picked up again, and you're actually pushing with your calf, and then your leg goes up, and then you've, let me say, gained traction again, if you know what I mean. So this is the most common way, and you can fix this with better cleat position, strengthening of the calf muscles, for example, and that's the most common one. But others is more like, sometimes I feel that you You know when you're like, if you're pushing a really big gear, so let's say you're doing strength training in the hills and you're doing 50 cadence at 350, 380 watts and you fire into that pedal stroke and it's too hard and you know you've lacked off a little and you've sort of found that middle ground where you can accelerate. So you actually do it, and these are the moments we're talking about. So what you want to do is just annihilate that and just be more fluid and more smooth.
What about you?
I'm not the best cyclist, but I've definitely improved it with the system, that's for sure. Yeah.
Have you noticed the results while out there riding?
Yeah, you know how sometimes, you know when you're in really good form and you're just so smooth on the bike, you feel really good compared to your second rest day in a Grand Tour. So it's, you know, when you're really dialed on your bike, it's like that. That's the difference.
Yeah, you just, and a good example, I can just feel it. You almost feel like you're comfortable in the saddle and you can just sort of pedal.
Yeah, exactly. And when you look at a guy like Victor Kampmannsen, it's like, no wonder he's the world hour record. He's just so fluid, and he's really like him and the bike as one piece.
Let's move on now to then things that you're currently not doing anymore that you used to do, that you used to love, or maybe
not
just
love.
Did. Who knows?
Okay, I have not caring about other people's opinions.
Nice one, I like it. So previously you used to.
Yeah, I think so. But probably not. How I feel now is, as I'm getting older and I feel more successful as I get older and not...
How old are you?
38.
Yeah, right.
And not just on the bike, I mean, more mean off the bike, but also when I look back on my life, a lot of the decisions that have put me where I am is because I didn't worry about what other people thought. And I feel if you worry too much about other people's opinions, it really, you're starting to live other people's lives and you're not really doing what you want to do. And if you have the ability to make good choices, then just do what you believe in. And this can be like, I can say, like when I first moved to Czech Republic, everyone's against it. Why there? And, you know, and I was into, before I was a cyclist, I was into software, and I used to write valuation software for Heron Ted White property valuers in Australia. And basically, if someone was to borrow money from the bank, the bank would send out a valuer and they would put into the system that I wrote, you know, what was the house like, the size and the area and the street, and we would compare the values to other houses and that, and we would give it a market value. And the bank would go, okay, it's worth X amount, and we will loan you 70% of that money to get a loan. So I was into property before cycling, and when I came to Europe and I moved to Czech Republic, it sort of hit me then as like, actually, technically, according to the EU, every country's in the EU, Czech is a great country to invest in real estate. And yeah, I invested a lot of money there. And I know everyone's like, yeah, but why are you living there? Why aren't you moving here? And, you know, all the cyclists are there. And it's just like these little decisions where, you know, just make your own decisions, life. And this is, you know, as the years gone on and Czech's economy is so good, and because I invested so much money in property there and property's gone up huge, just, you know, small decisions like this that really make a difference. Or when I turned pro, I was like doing these massive long rides, and guys in my hometown are like, oh, you're training too much, and why are you doing this, you should be doing this. And it's like, well, now I'm professional now, and you guys didn't turn pro, so maybe what I did do was, you know, maybe, I'm not saying it was the reason, but...
Did you struggle with, or where did you find that confidence in your own decision-making? Was that through research and knowledge and just going, you know what, if I look into things and understand the knowledge behind my decisions, I can be confident in them because I've done my own research?
Yeah, when you have more confidence, you're willing to do anything. And if we want to compare it to cyclists, you see sprinters, they think they can go through any hole when they're when they're confident in the bunch. But I think as you get older and you get more successful, yeah, you really stop worrying what other people think, and you just live your own life and you make your own choices in your way, and you believe in those choices. You know, I look back at my life and I'm here today because of the decisions I made. And if I really worry about what other people think, I think you just restrict yourself in your life too much.
I think that's a really good point, because often too, when you make that decision for yourself, you're going to make that work.
Yeah.
Opposed to if someone helped you make that decision. Sometimes you're second guessing it and going, I don't know. Yep. Whereas if you make it, you're like, God damn it, I'm going to make this work, all right?
Yeah, because yeah. You put your name to it.
Great one. All right, what else you got there? What are you currently not doing anymore?
Stressing.
Nice one. Wow, simple as that.
Simple as that. It's just stressing is just a feeling. It's just emotion that you create yourself. There's no reason to stress. And I know people probably listening going, yeah, but I got this problem. That's true. We all have problems and I do stress. I'm not saying I'm perfect at it. But stressing brings nothing. It doesn't help achieve any situation you're in. Whatever happens at night, you'll still go to bed and wake up the next day.
What are you doing to help yourself realize when you are stressing? Do you catch yourself? Are you like, oh, right, just pull that up, let that go, or I'm just going to be late. If I have to be late, I'm going to be late. Is that something you are aware of when you are stressing?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, first I always get stressed. That's just, it's not like I'm immune to stress, but I have a lot on my plate. I do a lot of things and I do get stressed. And then it's like, well, just calm down. It's not going to fix anything. You're just going to create more problems. You're not going to think straight and everything's going to be okay. And if it's not, then, you can't change it. Normally you stress because something has gone wrong and you can't fix what's gone wrong. That's happened. You can, you can make different choices and decisions to improve where the problem went wrong, but it's okay. I think a lot of times it's okay when something goes wrong. It's okay to, I always think this a bit off topic is what worries me a little with mobile phones today is when people are sitting at a bus stop, for example, they got 5 seconds on their hand, they bring out the phone and they just look at the feed and it's like, whoa, just leave the phone in the pocket and just embrace that loneliness, and just take it in and it's okay. It's okay. And I'm like that when I get stressed. It's like, if there's a big problem, it's like, no, it's okay. It's not the end of the world. And okay, I have another problem I've got to sort out. It's going to be sorted. And if it's not, this is the way it's going to be.
Can you give me an example of yourself whenever it was when you were stressing and you weren't aware of it in the race, in a bike race, and now when you come to that situation, how you'll handle it differently? Or how you do handle it differently. A good example for me, I used to get stressed was uphill start, really tired, maybe stage 15, 16 of a grand tour, getting dropped, stressing about trying to stay with the peloton to stay in the race. And what I understood was after a little time was, it was Swain Tufte who helped me realize that. Doesn't matter, we can just keep riding and we'll get there. And that was just a simple thing that I always kept in my head. And ultimately, I wasn't getting dropped as much. And it was just, I was actually killing myself with the stress. I can't get dropped here. It's only 2K in. And I was getting dropped because of that internal dialogue. And I've noticed that switch, whether that was over a couple of years or whether I was talking to him. But that's, for me, was a situation that I'm more aware of that doesn't happen as much anymore.
Yeah, he's exactly right. And I have the exact same mentality. It's like if you get dropped and it's okay to be dropped. It's not the end of the world too, and you get dropped and you see riders panic, and sometimes I won't even, we have that moment where it's like, okay, I can try and sprint to get back on, and if I get back on, I'll get dropped again anyway. Yeah. Like, or I can just keep going my pace, save a bit, and maybe the situation turns better. And even in those situations, I'm just like, no, I just, what's worst case? You'd be in the cars. It's pretty easy in the cars, actually, a lot of times. Sometimes it's better to be, behind the second car and in the cars and that than to try and hang on a lot longer. And I always say, it is pretty hard, unless it's, okay, if it's an uphill finish, uphill just at the start, it's pretty hard not to make the time limit, if you know what I mean? Okay, if it's a, three mountain stage and 90 kilometers, okay, then these are the super hard days also. But even it's, if you just, like Sven said, if you just keep going, I always say no matter what happens, you'll be sleeping in your hotel room that night.
That's actually something that's also got me through from our first podcast.
Yeah.
When it's not necessarily in that situation, but when it's been freezing cold, raining, whatever, and I just go, you know what? We've already done an hour and a half, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be an hour and a half more left of this stage, so I'm already halfway through. And probably in 2 hours' time, I'm going to be back in the hotel. So that was one piece of great advice you set in my head for those hard days.
Very good.
All right, what else have we got there? The last one of things you're not doing anymore.
back to nutrition, high-protein diets.
Whoa. So So you were back on the Atkins diet back in the day, were you?
No. I'm not into Atkins either. Oh, you mean that was the diet? Yeah. The funny thing is the guy that invented Atkins diet died of cardiovascular disease. So it's not the healthiest diet either. No high protein diets anymore. So I do my protein intake different. And, you know, I looked into nutrition and everything. And protein synthesis is very important for us. We need to recover. So we have to have a good amount of protein. And the thing is, if you have 35 to 40 grams of protein, it's about 3 to 4 grams of leucine. And that type of branched chain amino acid, you go into protein synthesis, so recovery. And the other thing that activates protein synthesis for recovery is exercise. So if you exercise and then you consume high amounts of protein afterwards, you go into anabolic estate and you recover better. And then you hear all these numbers where you should be having, depending on your body weight, like 150 to 180 grams of protein a day. What I found out was if you just have 10 grams of protein here in the morning in like a protein bar with maybe, you know, 15 grams or in there, and if you just spread your protein consumption out throughout the day and get your 180 grams of protein through the day, you might not actually have enough at one moment to go into protein synthesis. Mm. So what I do is more periodize when I have it. So I try and stay off it around breakfast if I have breakfast. And then training, okay, have your 40 or maybe even 50 grams of protein after your training to maximize your recovery for your training. And if it's a super hard day, then have another hit. So more, let's say, if my goal in the past was, you know, 150, 180 grams per day, I might just have 100 grams a day or even 80 grams a day, but two shots of 40 each, just to create that anabolic effect of protein synthesis.
But why would you want to reduce that protein intake? Why would you not want to have it in the morning as well? Why have you gone off that?
There's been a lot of studies where, like, I read a really good book, Proteinaholics. So humans are turned into, you know, everything protein. And I really believe, and there's, you know, I think a lot of things are, how do I say it, funded by organizations and that, like, especially the fitness, you know, there's, you know, protein bars and protein everything, and you're just constantly consuming protein. And protein's not an energy source. It can be converted as an energy, but it's not an energy source. So, you know, having so much protein before a race is not so beneficial. You know, you should be having carbohydrates before a race because, you know, carbs are our best energy source. But if you talk about, you know, animal protein is, you know, this has been proven not to be healthy at all. And the funny thing that I looked into was all your protein serves and all your protein shakes and everything's around 30, 33 grams. And they say if you have over 35 grams of animal protein, then it's really bad for your kidneys. And there was this one number I read, I think it was like 14%, was it 40%, don't quote me, is one of them, well, 40 or 14% of Americans have kidney-related diseases that aren't even aware of it. Mm. And it's because of overconsumption of animal protein. And the good thing about plant protein is you can have higher doses, still healthy for you, and go into a better protein synthesis.
So is it... moving away from the animal protein, or just I'm just talking about protein in general, yep. Is it for you non-beneficial to have protein first thing in the morning because it's just you don't need it, your body doesn't actually need it for recovery? Is that the whole reasoning behind that?
Depends the day before and the session, everything. I will stay off it.
Just on a pure recovery, sort of what the body would need at that moment. Not recovery, but...
yeah, well, as a trained athlete, we're always taking protein. Mm. So I don't think we need to just... I see people have, you know, like they have the oats and they'll sprinkle protein powder on it. But they might just sprinkle a bit on it. And if you haven't recovered properly for the next day, yes, I'll have, you know, enough protein to go to protein synthesis again to speed up your recovery. But if I haven't, you know, done anything difficult, so if I have a rest day the next day, if I'm going training, there should be no reason why I should be consuming protein. And it's not that, you know, be anti-protein. It's just like, well,
just have
enough.
You need it.
Yeah, we have enough.
All right, let's move on to our last topic, either wacky or weird things or Adam Hansen's quick fixes. What are you going to go for here, mate?
Okay, quick fixes are wacky. Every time I buy a laptop, I always...
Here we go.
I always I cut the power cable, and I always buy a normal electric cable 2 or 3 meters, and I'd resolder the ends on just so I have a longer cable. Because as you know, as we travel, there's nothing worse than having a short laptop cable. So yeah, this is the number one thing. And what I do is I change a plug. So a lot of the laptops I buy a bit more high performance. So they have the big European thing you can hit some guy on the back of the head and kill him. So I take that off and I put the slimline one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I put that on because you don't need the earth for a lot of these laptops. So I run that and it's easy.
So you mean like the one that fits in the Italian plug?
Yep.
Yeah, right. Yep. So in Italy they got these little holes, and then when you come with the normal Euro one, they don't fit in there.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you can do that. Can I bring my things up and get them rewired?
Sure. If you tell me what laptop you have, I can actually give you the cable. Because I got all the stuff at home. So
what, you just cut it open and then rewire it?
Yeah. And it's good because a lot of the cables, they're pretty thick. And so I make it with a bit of thinner, better quality cable and just more thinner. And just packs nicer in your backpack, and it's smaller and it's longer. And it's just these little things really help.
That's brilliant. Great. What else you got there?
Probably my wacky thing is my laptop bag.
Okay.
So my backpack. I have a backpack that I go everywhere with, and it's always packed. And it's like my little office in there, and it's just got like everything in there from... Like I have a toiletry bag I keep in my suitcase, but in my backpack I also have a toothbrush and toothpaste in there. Also, I have...
Is that emergency, or is that you like to clean your teeth along the way?
Also, but... If something goes wrong or I've got to go somewhere quickly, I just grab this bag. It's got everything in there.
Like, you don't even have to think. You can literally be out the door in 1 minute.
Yeah. Like I keep my travel wallet in there with my passport. So all my passports are already in there. My travel wallet's in there. Maybe my laptop's not in there. I've even got spare forks and knives in there, napkins, wet towels in there also.
Where is this backpack? Can I see it?
Oh, it's locked in my suitcase in there.
What brand is it?
It's Peak Design.
Okay.
Not sponsored by them. It is the best company for backpacks ever. They are so good quality.
Good little hidey hoes everywhere.
They have, seriously, it is the best. They're actually designed for cameramen, and they've got... Because I don't like the backpacks where you got top entry and you got a small hole. Where this is, you got dual entry, actually got three entries, so you can go through the top, or you can open up the sides, and then the sides, they open up, and then you've just got, like, everything can fit in there. And it's got, mine's a 30 litre, but it packs down to, I think, like a 17 litre, so you can actually extend it too, but still looks nice, full waterproof. But it's just got, everything in there, like everything. Like you name any, I've got all the cables already in there for traveling. Or if it's an emergency and I have to go to a bike race, I just got to bring a skin suit, my shoes fit in there, and that's it. And I'm happy with that. And what I like about backpacks is, I know everyone uses trolleys. You see the guys are trolleys. Like, I've been in so many situations at the airport where you have to run, and with a trolley, it's a nightmare.
And also, I think I'm a backpack man too. One time... I was maybe 100% convert to backpack. I was on the border of trolley or backpack. I didn't know. One time I got on a flight and I was with Chris Sutton. They didn't let his bag on the flight.
Yeah.
You know, when you get right to the door, put it under.
Yeah.
So he put it under. He didn't think anything of it. We got to the other end. His bag didn't turn up, that carry-on bag. It was a late night flight into Barcelona. His keys were in that bag. Didn't have keys to his apartment. I was just like... What a disaster.
Yeah.
So I was just like, never again.
Yeah, also with flights, I like my backpack by my feet too.
Exactly.
I don't like... And it's good because, you know, when you got the trolleys and some of the planes we catch, they're chock blocks full. And to find a place in the overheads for your trolley is impossible.
Plus there's no hidey-hose in a trolley. Like you can't just quickly put something in.
No.
You've got to lay it down, get it in.
And when you can put your backpack by your feet, you can board last. You know there's a place for you.
Can access it the whole flight. Don't have to get up.
Exactly.
Great one. All right. What have we got? What's the last thing you got there?
I don't know. I'm stuck on the third one. You know, if I'm in other people's houses, I've got to fix everything I see that's broken. There's something I have to do.
I need to get you over at our house for a while. Seriously. What's your morning routine like these days?
At this race?
Yeah. Run me through. So tomorrow, I like to set the alarm with enough time, minimum 2 hours before we're going.
I'm the opposite.
Yeah, right. So you sleep right to the wire.
So I'll probably wake up 30 minutes before we're meant to get out of here.
Really?
Yeah, but I have super late nights. Like, I'm up until 2 or 3 in the morning. I'm not a good sleeper.
Okay.
So I'm up super late, and I'll set the alarm. Like, there's Legends night dinner tonight, right? So we didn't have time to have the debriefing tonight. And then they said, oh, we'll have it 8:10 in the morning. And I was thinking, okay, that cuts about half an hour of my sleep, like, directly. So, as you saw, I have my oven in the room.
Yeah, that's something we should talk about, yeah.
So I have an oven. So I've got my own room. So I've got the oven there, and I've been, you know, cooking my own food at night. I've got a Nutribullet just behind you. So I've already made my breakfast in the morning. It's sitting in the fridge. So I've got overnight oats there, with some dates and bananas, and yeah, so I've got my breakfast already made. And I'll literally get up, boil the water, make my own coffee, grab my bowl, come back in bed, and then I'll just have breakfast right here.
And what do you do while you're having breakfast in bed?
I listen to the news.
Huh. On the radio?
No, on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I like The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. So, actually, I watch a lot of the American news, and, you know, with all impeachment and everything, so I've been following that quite a bit. Yeah, a bit about the economy, science news.
You still in the instant coffee?
Just the instant coffee, yeah. It's okay. It's not too bad. So, it's not bitter. It's a good thing. That's what I like about instant coffee. If you don't have sugar or you don't have milk,
it's drinkable.
Yeah, it's good.
Freeze-dried, drinkable. Yeah. Yeah, all right. So you sit down and you have your breakfast, and then, like, this is all within, like, I guess, 15 minutes.
Yeah, and then I put my numbers on, and then I get dressed and I just walk out. That's it. I go straight to the van.
Because I was saying that we all eat in this big dining hall here, which we discussed last year, but I hadn't seen you there all week, and I just came up tonight. I'm like, mate, has your team not been eating in the hotel? He said, well, I don't know really what they're doing, but I know I'm eating up here. And that's what he was doing. He was making his breakfast in his little oven and making his breakfast in here before he went out.
Yeah, so I know a lot of guys go to the sushi train directly afterwards, so they have their big meal there. And then going to dinner is just a little touch-up. I've actually been there once this year so far. So I was there for one dinner, and that was because we won one stage and we're going to have dinner together. So I went there. It was pretty funny. Like, we went there and then guys already ate before. And then Roger came down and goes, oh, let's go out and eat. And I was like, okay. Then so we're all eating at different places and that. But yeah, just to, I don't know, I just like to, because I really need my downtime, you know. Just this race is, you know, it's nice. It's all easy and everyone's together, but it's just, you know, everyone's together. And,
and it's easy. Yeah, easy it's access.
Easy access. That's true.
Great, mate. Well, thank you again. I hope we can record the next annual this time next year. On a personal note, I hope we can catch up a lot more before then.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me again.
Thanks, mate. Well, there we have it. He had some pretty good insights there, and I certainly love the last segment of that when he was just getting into all that quirky stuff that he does. And I really wasn't surprised. Well, I was surprised, but I wasn't. I knew he'd have some gems there, you know, cutting his laptop cable and rewiring it. Who the hell does that, you know? I have actually since heard that there is one other person out there that does it. Michael Friedberg apparently does the same thing. And I guess what? I was not surprised to hear that either.
I could listen to Adam Hansen talk about pretty much anything, Mitch, but what I'm interested in is how did he come up with this idea of these three core questions?
Well, I have a few podcasts that I listen to myself, and one of them being Tim Ferriss, who he talks about a whole range of things. And he actually was talking to a friend of his, a doctor friend of his, and he had this idea where he was asking him these three questions, more or less around the same idea. I was listening to it and I was thinking, I really love the podcast. So I was thinking, hang on, I know a guy like that. I've got a doctor friend, you know, in inverted commas, Adam Hansen. I reckon this would fit him perfect. And I presented the idea to him and he just gave me the thumbs up and a message and I thought, right, let's go for it.
I mean, he's quite an original thinker, isn't he? And I wonder what your perspective on his incredible run of consecutive Grand Tours was. I mean, there was, I can't remember off the top of my head now how many he got up to, but it was certainly double figures in a row, wasn't it, of riding the Giro, the Tour and the Vuelta year after year. I mean, you've completed these three-week races as well, Mitch. I mean, what is it that somebody needs in order to even set themselves that as a target once, let alone do it multiple times?
Well, I actually talked to him about this in the previous podcast I've done. Go back and have a listen in my catalogue. And we discussed it when he was at number 19. I think he finished at 21. And one thing that blew my mind about that record alone was the fact that he never was sick or injured, that he just physically, even if he wanted to, just couldn't complete it. And that was something I spoke to him about at the time. And he said, well, you could say that. And I was like, what do you mean? And apparently he finished there one year with, you know, broken ribs and a fractured, you know, shoulder and things like that. So things that he's done that just to do that record itself, just without bad luck and just the psychological side of things, year in, year out, being able to do it. And he actually told me that he just loved the routine of it. It just allowed him so much more time at home. He did the race, but then in between the races, he knew he had that downtime. He had his 3 weeks or 4 weeks of training they used to do, kept it really simple. You know, a week of base, a week of strength, a week of speed, and he was in the next race. And when you said it like that, I was like, actually sounds pretty easy. Maybe I should go for the record.
Oh, I don't want to say it, Mitch, but you may have left it a bit late to try and do 20 in a row.
Unfortunately, look, I don't think I've got that physique and definitely not that kind of lifestyle now with the kids and the family. I'd just be probably shot after I got home by my wife if I did that. But I do love seeing Adam in the races, and that's just a great guy to chat to. And as you can see from this podcast, you can talk to him about anything out there, and he's always got something really interesting to say.
Well, talking about racing, Mitch, what have you been doing recently to try and replace the road racing that's not going on at the moment?
I actually did this test event today for the virtual Tour of Swiss, and it's run by this company called Ruvi, which is essentially like Zwift, but a bit different. It's literally video footage of a road, of the course, and they've got it's like a real avatar on there, a person, you know, with, they've filmed, I guess, and they've put them on there. So it's quite different to Zwift, but the same theory. And we did this race today. It was a 26K race. It took an hour and it was hard. It was very hard. It was just climbing, small descents and climbing. But I was pretty proud of myself. I finished sixth there today, right behind Bilbao. Walt Piles, I was only just two places in front of me. So I was climbing like a demon out there. I set a new hour best record. I tell you what, this Swift is doing me wonders.
So this is going to be a five-day stage race. As we speak, we're talking on Tuesday afternoon. So the race itself starts on Wednesday, and I gather people are going to be able to watch it on TV as well. I know that here in the UK, it's going to be shown by the BBC online.
I don't know what that will be really like to watch. It is a funny thing because there's no drafting in it. So it's essentially like just doing a time trial and another guy rides past you and you try and ride past him and whoever's stronger wins, more or less. That's more or less what it is. Whoever's strong on the day wins. There's not too many tactics about it. So I don't know how it'll go for viewing. I'm interested to see that. But at this moment, I'm liking my chances.
Well, we'll catch up next time on how you've got on. But I'll be tuning in, I think, to see how you do.
Yeah, and it's just making this time in this period, you know, a bit more interesting. We've got, I wouldn't say I felt nervous, but I definitely felt more nervous than when I just jump on there every morning and do my training session. I was like, well, I better have something proper to eat and I better have my bottles ready. And once the gun went off, I got into it and got going. So it's definitely giving us something a little bit extra during this period of lockdown and of no racing. So it's been fantastic.
And well, Mitch, we've got a couple of episodes coming up in May, which would have been around the time the Giro d'Italia was on. On the Cycling Podcast, we're doing daily coverage of our Giro, an alternative Giro d'Italia, which, tune in to find out what exactly we've got planned. But hopefully you've got a couple of Giro-themed episodes, or at least one Giro-themed episode in the pipeline, perhaps?
Yes, I'm going to have a look at trying to get the crew back together of the infamous 2014 stage win by Green Edge in the team's time trial. And that was a real band of brothers there, that crew. Some of my good mates still now. We just had a great time on that Giro, and we ended up finishing only with two riders, Michael Hepburn and Swain Tuft. And I was the third last guy to last there. But it was, we all started guns blazing and ended with two guys. So it's quite an incredible story. I'm going to try and get those guys together this week and have a chat to all of them and talk some tales from 2014. So hopefully I can get that together for you guys in 2 weeks' time.
Excellent, excellent. I'll look forward to that. It's a race I remember well because we went to Ireland for the Grande Partenza, which was in Belfast. That's where the team time trial was. And then Marcel Kittel won both road stages, I think, didn't he? One in Belfast and one in Dublin. But it was a great weekend over there in Ireland. And I didn't follow it back to Italy that year, but I remember watching as the Orica Green Edge team basically controlled the whole of the first week, didn't you?
Yeah, we had some fun days there. And riding myself into the ground specifically, I remember a couple of days. And I was just remembering then there was the Barry stage, which was down in Sicily, and it rained and actually neutralized that stage, and it was like ice. Like, it was so slippery, and there was people going crazy and crashing, and it was an amazing sort of tour, that one. There's a lot of stuff that happened, and I'm sort of looking forward to fleshing that one out with the boys over the next coming weeks. So if you guys haven't heard it, make sure you go back and listen to the Talking Luft series, which is happening back on Life in the Peloton's old feed. It's just a little 10-minute segment, which is going to feature every guest that we're doing here on the Cycling Podcast, Life in the Peloton podcast. And then I've just grabbed them for a little 10 minutes after every recording and just gone, ask them some cheeky questions. So it's a little extra special package there for everyone if they want to go and check that out. I've got Adam Hansen as well after this episode. That'll be released next Wednesday, so make sure you go check that out. But until then, guys, you know, in 2 weeks' time, we'll have hopefully that Giro episode and some more cycling podcast episodes coming up. So thanks for tuning in. Cheers. You have been listening to Life in the Peloton. The producer of this episode was Will Jones. The music in this episode was composed by Pete Shelley. Thanks, mate.